You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When Sam Shepard died of complications of ALS this past July 27th, he left behind a body of work that included 55 plays, among them Barry Child, for which he won a Pulitzer Prize, also several volumes of short fiction and a novel, plus the 60 or so films he appeared in as an actor. Now, his final work of fiction, a novella called Spy of the First Person, is being published by Knopf. And to celebrate, tomorrow night at St. Anne's Church in Brooklyn Heights, his longtime friend Patti Smith, who helped to edit and shape the book along with Shepard's family, is presenting an evening called Remembering Sam Shepard. And I'm very pleased to welcome Patti Smith back to our show to tell us about it. Hi.
Thank you. Hi.
Did you meet Sam Shepard when you were living at the Chelsea Hotel in the late 60s?
Well, I was living near the... I was living in a small loft near the Chelsea. Robert Mapplethorpe and I shared a small loft, and I met him then in 1970.
And he was in a band then, the Holy Muddle Rounders?
He was in the Holy Muddle Rounders, and actually Todd Rundgren, who is a friend of mine, asked me to come see them because he was thinking of producing them. And I had never heard of them, and I had never heard of Sam Shepard. But I was very taken with the drummer because he was such a great singer, had tremendous magnetic energy. And so I really met Sam as a drummer.
Hmm. You had no idea that he also wrote plays?
No, I didn't. I didn't know anything about him.
But was he already writing plays at that point?
Yes, he was quite successful. He had Operation Sidewinder on Broadway, and he had already received a few Obies, but... I wasn't really connected with the theater, so he wasn't on my radar.
But then you became romantically involved for a while.
Yes, we did.
And during that time, didn't you write a play together?
Yes. Before we parted in 1971, we wrote a play together called Cowboy Mouth. And because, I mean, the reason that Sam and I, going through some rocky times, were able to have a friendship till the end of his life is a lot of our relationship was work-centric, and we didn't let that go.
So often when romances end, people find it hard to continue talking to each other, but you remained friends and, as you say, I guess, had a working relationship to the end. Did you appear in that play with him?
Yes, we only did it a few times. We did two or three performances, I can't remember. But we rehearsed it and performed it together. And we wrote it together by sitting next to each other. We had a room at the Chelsea Hotel then. And we just, he set up the scene. And then we handed off the typewriter back and forth to each other. And it's just a two-character play. So he'd write something, I'd respond to it, and he shaped it as a play.
After his death, you wrote a tribute to him in the New Yorker titled My Buddy. Did you see yourselves as buddies as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was, you know, it wasn't like a brother. We were never like that. You know, we were just like, you know, At our age now, I mean, both of us in our 70s, you know, we had no baggage. We had no problems. We didn't fight. You know, we didn't have any expectations. We just trusted each other, liked to work together, talk about books, roam around the streets. And yes, he was my buddy.
And you dedicated your recent book, M Train, to him.
Yes, because he was the enigmatic cowpoke that
I was going to ask you about that.
Yes, he absolutely. And of course, he absolutely recognized himself.
He was he had a very active career up until a year or so before he died. In 2016, his Pulitzer Prize winning play, Barry Child, was revived. And he also made several films. When was he diagnosed with ALS?
A couple of years ago, I can't remember the exact time, but he was having certain symptoms, and I think it was very, very difficult to diagnose because it's normally a young person's affliction.
So it just came out of the blue?
Yes, slowly.
And how did he deal with it?
stoically.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Well, it'll be an inspiration to me for the rest of my life to see Helen Mann, who was so virile, so active. You know, he rode horses. He liked to rope cattle. He rode horses in the Andes. He liked to get in a truck and then just drive to Mexico. And he liked being free. He liked being mobile. And he handled it with as much dignity and patience as one could imagine.
In this novella, Spy of the First Person, his unnamed narrator describes going to a famous clinic in Arizona in hopes of a magic cure. Isn't ALS a degenerative disease? Has anybody come up with a cure yet?
No.
No treatment?
No. I mean, there are things that you can do to perhaps make people comfortable. I'm not an expert on ALS, so I'm not the right person to ask. But as far as I know, and what I've seen, it's degenerative, and there is no cure.
Speaking with Patty Smith about Sam Shepard's last published work called Spy of the First Person, when did he start writing this book?
Well, he had just finished. Sam was always writing, always. I mean, writers write. We write all the time. And he had already written The One Inside, and he just kept writing. So I couldn't exactly pinpoint when he wrote it. It's just that he never stopped writing.
But this is when he had ALS, so he had to dictate parts of the book. Couldn't type it? Or
He began it writing as best he could, and when he was no longer able to write, he taped. Things were set up for him so he could tape record himself and dictate. So he amassed, a certain amount of material.
And you're credited with helping him edit the book. Did you go to his farm in Kentucky to work with him on it?
Yes, I spent a lot of time there. I mean, intermittently. And Sam was a worker. I mean, despite anything that he was going through, he could sit and concentrate for hours at a time. So because we're both writers, basically what I did was I was just did whatever he couldn't do. So, I mean, editing is tedious, and he had always edited by hand, and he doesn't use a computer. He never used a computer, and it's a tedious business because you have to write things over and over, and we found ways to cut through that mire, you could say, and one of it was simply by reading the pages over and over. Sometimes, 100 pages, 3 or 4 times a day.
Saying it aloud and
yes.
Allows you to hear what's wrong with the sentence.
So he could look and think, and also,
he wrote plays also, so the sound of the writing must have been important to him.
Yes, and the rhythm. I mean, the thing is, because we were friends, writers, that the process, we both know the process, we both know the joy and the tedium of the process. So it was nothing if he had to sit and think about something for 5 or 10 minutes, he would just sit there and think and correct things or go over things. But he was absolutely, he knew exactly what he wanted. In fact, his last session, I wasn't there for his last session. The changes and the additions he did were so subtle and so, they were just like small jewels. He was completely, he was like a laser working on this little book.
He must have been aware that he didn't have much more time. Did he?
Oh, I don't know. We didn't talk about that.
I was going to ask you if you talked.
One hopes for infinite time, and when you're working, it wasn't we didn't work like there was no tomorrow. We worked like we want this. He wanted it to be as good as he could make it.
The book seems to be a mixture of fiction and memoir, and it has two narrators, one of them spying on the other, an older man who seems to be Shepherd himself. Was he looking at himself from a distance, commenting on his physical decline and his dependence on his family, who had to help him do even the smallest things in the last days of his life?
Sam looked at everything he did as fiction, no matter how much memoir or life. It's like Janae wrote, you know, some of it, they're weaved together and braided together seamlessly. And I never, we never talked about who was who, you know, and speculated on anything. And that's for the reader to decide or critics to decide. As the person that, you know, as my friend and also the person that was, you know, doing whatever corrections he needed, it was all about the writing.
The book also includes passages about his parents, his boyhood in California, his time in New York in the 1970s. He's kind of reminiscing, looking back at his life.
Well, Sam always does that. I mean, yes, you're exactly right. And but I think that even in the book before, The One Inside has a lot of the same, it's a different subject, but a sense of looking back at America. They're both very American books. That's what I think are so beautiful about. I mean, I would suggest people read both of them together.
That was his first novel, The One Inside.
The One Inside was his last.
Oh.
We worked on that one together too. That's how we developed our process, which was basically an oral process. And the two of them together, really, you get a sense of his view of America, the American plane, at a certain time of life, at a time that's gone. And I find it really beautiful. A lot of it is like photographs or home movies of America.
Could you read just a little bit for us?
Yeah, I can be out of context, but I see if I... There are times when I can't help thinking about the past. I know the prison is the place to be. It's always been the place to be. I know I've been recommended by very wise people to stay in the present as much as possible, but the past sometimes presents itself. The past doesn't come as a whole. It comes in parts. In fact, it comes apart. It presents itself as though it was It presents itself as though it was experienced in fragments. Why? Why, for instance, is the past, excuse me, why, for instance, is the present preferred to the past? Because assumedly the present is what is making memories. It's what's making the past. Sometimes it seems very fleeting. What exactly is the experience of the present? The experience of the present is one of anonymity, complete anonymity. The way the sun hits the pavement, the way it hits your bare feet, the way the dog's debris squeezes between your toes, the way a quarter goes a long way, the way a quarter used to go a long way, the way a quarter could buy you an Abba Zaba, the way chlorine smells, the way chlorine attacks your nostrils, the way your trunks fit, the way water comes over your head, the way your eyes open underwater and seize things. And what do you see? You see other people, other human beings struggling to keep their eyes open. The present is a many-faceted thing, much like the past.
Patti Smith, reading from Sam Shepard's last published work, Spy of the First Person, which is published by Knopf, and tomorrow you'll be presenting an evening called Remembering Sam Shepherd at St. Anne's Church on Montague Street in Brooklyn Heights. Will you be reading from the book or appearing with your band?
I'll be reading some. It's a very small book, so I'll just be reading from that and probably from The One Inside, but Tony Shanahan and Lenny Kaye are joining me, and we all knew Sam. We'll be doing songs and singing songs Sam liked, a couple of songs that were written for him. And, you know, I just, you know, it's the book is such a beautiful little book. I'm so sorry that he never got to see it, but he put his whole self into this last little book. And, you know, we want to commemorate that and have a nice night in memory of him.
Tomorrow night, as I said, at 7 at St. Anne and the Holy Trinity Church at 157 Montague Street, co-presented by PEN America and Knopf with Books Are Magic. And if you want to find out about tickets, you can visit our show page at wnyc.org/lopate. Thank you so much for being on our
show,
Patty.
Thank you so much.